You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the views of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today is going to be a short show, probably 30 to 40 minutes, not the regular hour. And I'm going to devote it to one topic, and that's the cutting of defense spending. The Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, announced this week that the size of the Army will be reduced to a level of 440,000 to 450,000 by 2017 over the next 3 years, and that would be the lowest level since pre-World War II. Now, usually after wars, defense spending definitely declines. And for those that are new to the show, this show will have a lot of graphical information that gives you a very broad perspective of not only U.S. military expenditures, how it's changed over time. And you'll notice after every war, whether it's the World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam, post-Cold War, as well as after Iraq and Afghanistan, defense spending has dramatically been cut. And that should be expected and be a surprise to no one. Some of the reaction, at least out of Congress, is, you know, you can't do this. Well, the problem you have is congressmen and senators come from districts and states where you have large military bases, whether they're Army, Navy, or Air Force. So their initial reaction is always to resist any changes in spending. But the Defense Department will be the first department to dramatically have cuts. Now, this is going to have to happen to all the federal departments. Defense, because it's the largest in terms of a single department, and right now it's about between 19 and 20% of the total budget is defense, and it's a large percentage of discretionary spending as well. For example, for the fiscal year 2013 budget, approximately 57% of discretionary spending is for the military. So you hear two numbers, one being the total budget, which includes entitlements such as Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, as well as welfare spending, which are large. For example, entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid together are approximately 45% of the budget. And that's more than twice what defense spending is. But those are so-called mandatory expenditures. And they're mandatory because if you meet the qualifications, for example, Social Security or Medicare, you're entitled to get the benefits because people have paid in to both Social Security and Medicare during their working years. So when they reach, for example, age 65 for Medicare and 66 or 67 for Social Security, they usually start collecting both programs. Some people will start Social Security a little earlier, some a little later, but those are by far the biggest dollar values that the federal government spends on. Now, the problem is we've been running such massive deficits, partly because of the wars, but they're certainly not the whole story. But because we've run these massive deficits, not only in the Bush years, but tremendous deficits in the first 5 years of Barack Obama, what's going to have to happen is a dramatic downsizing, not only of the Defense Department, which is in the process, is taking place, but also of all other federal departments. And if you listen to this show, you'll know in the past I've recommended that they have to permanently shut down at least eight departments, because that's how serious the situation is. Government spending, federal government spending, is totally, completely out of control. The U.S. taxpayers cannot afford this large government, and the only way really to save the popular programs, which are Social Security and Medicare, is a dramatic downsizing of the federal government. That includes the elimination of federal departments, as well as agencies and programs, as well as their radical downsizing. That said, I'm for a strong defense, but I also recognize that we need to downsize the Department of Defense. It's just simply too big. And most of that's a good chunk of that spending has been spent on building bases and maintaining bases abroad. It's the majority of American people want the troops home. They want a strong defense, but they want the troops home. They don't want any part of any more government intervention abroad. The days of making the safe world for democracy and building democratic nations abroad is not really playing well anymore in the United States. They're sick of sending their sons and daughters to be either wounded or killed abroad. They're sick of spending money that what happens is a good chunk of it is paid to corrupt politicians abroad. They're sick of that. They want the troops home. They want no part of government intervention abroad. However, we have both Republicans and Democrats that want intervention both in the U.S. economy and abroad. So it's going to be very, very interesting 10 years because this is going to be forced on the federal government. We cannot continue our spendthrift ways. And we're already hearing complaints about, oh, they can't cut the size of the Army down to 440,000 to 450,000. It's currently at approximately 520,000 and was in the process of going to 490,000. So this is an additional cut of roughly 40,000 to 50,000 troops. Now, does that mean it's going to happen? I doubt it, because Congress, both in the House and the Senate, are going to resist this. So it's going to be the Army, for example, will be somewhere between 440,000 and 490,000. My suspicion is it'll level off at probably 480,000. There's going to be a little horse trading compromise. That's the Army. There are also aircraft that need to be or are going to be done away with, namely the A-10 program, the Warthog that was the tank killer. That program, there are approximately, to my knowledge, 24 of those fighters still in active duty. They're going to be eliminated as a cost-cutting measure because there are better and more advanced aircraft coming. Now, for those that have not listened to the show, the way you listen to the show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And if you go there, you'll see at the very top links to the most current shows. And below that, you will have a complete portfolio of all my past shows. Now, I always highlight it on the show because what I give you every show is extensive notes in the form of either photographs, graphics, charts. This one has a lot of charts, as well as YouTube videos and any articles that I've read, or I'm very selective on this. Now, for example, one of the videos has a picture of the A-10. I just noticed it, and that's one of the aircraft that apparently is going to be cut. I can understand why. But for the congressional district where they're based and the state which they're based are going to obviously fight it. And this always happens because what's happening is you have technology all is advancing and improving, and you have innovation. Just for example, when I joined the Air Force, was on active duty, I was in the F-15 program. And I joined the program, they had just completed first flight, and they were still in the test phase. But I was involved in both negotiating the contract for the purchase of first two fiscal years and the reset of those contracts. Now, why am I telling you this? Those planes were designed in the late 1960s. They're still flying today. They're very good airplanes. They're very capable planes. And I think they will be flying for another 20 years. Why? What is McDonnell Douglas, who's the builder of that aircraft? McDonnell Douglas was bought out by Boeing now. They are constantly improving that aircraft. When I was involved in the program, they had the F-15 A's and B's. Now they have E's. And there have been a lot of improvements, conformable tanks. But it's really the electronics in it that gets really the electronics and avionics, and to a certain extent the radar, that gets improved. So those aircraft are terrific. However, what do they have to compete with today? The F-35, for example. So, and that's just the Air Force. There are always going to be advances and improvements in weapon systems. And for the Air Force, that's aircraft. For the Navy, that's ships and the missiles and other weapon systems that they carry. So you need to change as the situation changes. But
let's put it in a much broader context, because a lot of people just don't understand how much money the United States government spends on the military. The United States alone spends, in terms of total world spending on government, on military spending, approximately 45%. I want you to think about that number. Not quite half, and that's just the United States. If you add our allies, for example, the United Kingdom, France, Italy, Germany, Japan, South Korea, you're over 60%. So the United States and its allies together are over 60%. You'd have to add up, and you'll see different statistics, either the next 14 to 19 nations spending to equal what the United States is spending. So we are by far the largest spender on military expending. And what's interesting is to relate that to the gross national product, what the United States actually produces. We spend a little under 5%, I think it's 4.6, it's right about 4.6 today, of GDP on national defense or military spending. Most nations spend significantly less, namely under 3 or even 2%. In Japan, it's about 1%. Now, what's going to happen and what should happen? Our allies, that's West Germany, France, the United Kingdom, Japan, South Korea, and others, Australia, Canada, are going to have to take up the slack and increase military spending. Now, what are the major threats? It's China, Russia, Iran, I would say, are the top three. But they only spend a fraction. If you added China and Russia spending, you would get, I'm just ballparking it, it's about a little over 20%. Well, in terms of our spending, it's about over a third. But you'd have to add two nations to come to that. We still spend a lot more than them. So I'm not at all surprised at the downsizing. I think it's long overdue. But, and the big but is, you can propose any. The president can propose a budget, which he's going to do next week on March 4th. But who writes the money bills? Who does the approves the authorizations and appropriation? It's Congress. Congress is the one that decides how much money will be spent on these programs. And because of political pressure locally, we're not going to go down to an army that's in the 440 to 450,000 level. We'll probably level off somewhere around 475,000 to 480,000, which is still less than where we're at now, but we need to do that. We need to bring, here's what really aggravates me. We have reservists that are on their third, fourth, fifth, and in some cases six or more tours overseas. First in Iraq and then in Afghanistan. Deployments. Our armed forces, especially the Army and the Marines, and I don't want to leave out the Air Force and Navy, are tired. They need to re-energize. They need R&R, and we need to bring the troops home. So I'm not against Obama doing this, except the manner he's doing it. And that's a subject of another show. But it's reflecting the opinion of the American people. See, at one time, you can be in the reserves and really, I won't say never be deployed, but seldom be deployed. Those days are long gone, because we've been at war for over 12 years. We're still at war, and we'll be at war even when we leave Afghanistan. We're going to leave probably between 30 and 50,000 Air Force, Army, Marines over there, despite what you might hear in the news. There are many people, not necessarily myself, that would like to get it to zero right away. I don't think that's really a cut and run strategy. But here's what's frustrating. The leadership of those countries in Afghanistan and Iraq, they don't want us there. And I always say, if people don't want us there, then get out. We, in response to Al-Qaeda and bin Laden, invaded Afghanistan and subsequently Iraq. And even though we've killed bin Laden, we've executed Hussein, the killing is still going on. And they're going to be killing each other when we leave. And I always use the analogy, it's like in any city across the United States, there are parts of the city, and most people are aware of them, that you don't go there casually. In other words, they're not the best part of town. If you go there, you probably might get mugged, you might get robbed, and you better be prepared. You better be carrying a weapon. You better lock your doors. In other words, if you go in deliberately in those parts of any city, you have to be aware of the situation, totally aware of the situation. You need to have situational awareness. You're best to mind your own business and stay out of there. Now, this is common sense. But when you add the fact that we're perceived by many, if not most, of the people that are the natives of those countries as foreign invaders, they tend to side with the terrorist or people that are trying to kill us. And that's why I'm not for government intervention. It inevitably results in the deaths and wounding of thousands of Americans, and usually many, many more civilians, innocent civilians. And the cost is astronomical. Just ask yourself, what if we handle it entirely different, the bin Laden attack, and we confined our attention to getting him and his network? I think this war would have been over a decade ago. We didn't do that. We expanded the mission, called so-called mission creep, trying to win their hearts and minds. That's not what the armed forces of the United States are for. They're not there to build a nation up. They're not there to be the cop on the beat. They're there to kill people, destroy things, to kill the enemy's resistance so he stops fighting. And you need victory. You do need total victory, and we did not get total victory in either Afghanistan or Iraq. Because if you wanted it, we'd be there for another 10 to 20 years. There is a price for all empires, and that price is in blood and treasure, and we've paid that price. And yes, no one elected us policemen of the world. I'm sick of it, because why not the entire spending that's been out of control can be traced to military spending. A good chunk of it can be, at least 20%. I don't know the exact number, somewhere between 20 and 30%. Some would say more, some would say less. So military spending will definitely be going down. It has been going down. Really, since 2010, it's been going down. It will level off. We're not doing away with the armed forces. If you listen to some of the coverage, it was, oh my God. But this is not unusual at all. And you only have to look at the first chart, and I'm glad I put it up. It shows from 1948 to 2012, total budget authority for the Defense Department. And what has happened? It's gone down, down, and down. And you can see what the sequester will do. And it flattens out, but that's to be expected. So if we put it in big context, and I want you to go down to next to the last chart. And this is very, very important chart. It breaks down defense spending from 1962 to the present by major categories. Personnel typically is the largest category. That's personal pay and housing, primarily pay. And that's the red base, if you will. On top of that is procurement, weapons procurement, such as for the F-15 or the F-35. And you need to understand, when you're buying any weapon, it takes many, many years in testing it, pre-production, production, and in getting it in the field and in training the people in the weapon system. It's a multi-year process. You can't, let's say for whatever reason you wanted to have a brand new fighter. Well, it'll be 5 to 10 years before you would see that first aircraft. Yeah, you could do it in a shorter time period. We did in World War II. And if we had an all-out mobilization and went on a war footing where military production had priority, yeah, you could cut it down probably to 2 to 3 years, but it's going to take time. You go to war with the weapons you have and the people and how well they're trained. But the two big slices are that. Now, I'm going to skip over one, but I want to go to the most important. It's operations, and it's really more than that. It's training. Now, when we're in fighting wars, that is going to take a much bigger chunk, and you see that. You definitely see, as we went to a war in Iraq and as well as Afghanistan, to a certain extent in Libya, it shot up. Now it's going down, and that is going to be squeezed. The important point is to get to a force structure, whether it's the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, the Marines, that you can stabilize and then train, train, train. The name of the game is training, and that costs money because you need to fire your weapons. You need to use the weapons you're going to go to war with. So it's the operations budget that's critical, although that is seeing significant cuts. Doesn't surprise me. The other is research and development. You have nuclear and construction. What you're seeing is always happens after a war. And many people want to make it a career, and many people don't. So many people will definitely can't wait to exit, especially if they're not in the reserves, they're in the regular forces, and there'll be downsizing there, and the same thing with the officers' corps. It happens. And a few people that want to stay on duty might have to take a significant cut in rank. It definitely happened after World War II. So that's what we're facing. You're going to hear more stories like that. I would not panic. I think this was totally expected. And you are going to get some pushback from certain states where there's a lot of military spending, whether it's Navy ports, Air Force bases, or Army bases. We certainly have our share in Texas, but you also have them in Virginia and across the country in Washington. And this will be the first of many stories on this. But what's happening in the Defense Department really needs to be happening in all federal departments. And it's not. It is not. Because what we've had for the last 5 years is the federal government went on a spending spree. And all departments really started to spend like mad. And I have a chart that kind of puts the 11 largest outlays by department. HHS, Health and Human Services, by far, it's still growing. And the second, this should not surprise you, is Social Security, because more baby boomers are retiring. That will be growing. And the third is defense. Those are the top three. And those are largely Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, and defense spending. You still have welfare. You still have, and those, for example, would be included in that, food stamps or SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, that today is approaching 50 million Americans on. You see, I've been waiting for this, but we really have not seen those other departments really take the cut. It's flattening out, but these other departments really need to be downsized. And who's going to resist that? Yes, the Democratic Party under Barack Obama. You see, they're all for the cuts in defense spending, as am I. But I want to see those eight departments, if not permanently shut, at least dramatically cut. And that includes, for example, the Department of Education, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Commerce, Department of Transportation, Energy, are some of the big ones. And we need fundamental reform in both entitlement programs and welfare programs. That means benefits will be cut. That means welfare payments or checks will be cut. We need to get America working again. Now, it was rather unique, but after World War II, many economists were predicting that we might go back into the Depression of the 30s. That did not happen. What happened? A period from roughly 1948 to about through 1972 were boom years in the United States. Now, there's a reason for that. Germany was defeated. Japan was defeated. Their industrial capacity was gone. So they were rebuilding. And much of France and as well as the United Kingdom and parts of Europe, they also lost not only people in the war, and Russia needs to, they lost millions. in terms of just deaths, it's the Russians that took the biggest hits. So the United States was left with, almost of all the nations, its industrial capacity untouched by war. We supplied the weapons, the ammunition, the goods that you need, the food to wage the war. And after the war, we were the source of many of those essentials that were needed for these nations to get back on their feet. So for a period of 25 years, the United States experienced prosperity, a high economic growth rate. We need that again, but that's a unique situation, a very unique situation. A high percentage of the U.S. population was in school. We had a high rate of literacy. Well, what's happened since then, over the last 40 to 50 years, is Europe has rebuilt. Japan has rebuilt. And even China, which was a basket case into the 70s, is now expanding and providing many of our goods. Just go to a Walmart if you don't believe me. Made in China, made in China, made in China. We have global competition. And many of those nations, not all, but many of them, don't spend much on military deliberately. They spend typically 1 to 2% of their GDP on military spending. We spend more than twice that. It's no accident that in terms of total military spending today, we're about 45%. And you to equal that 45%, you would have to add up another, you get a different list, but around 14 to 19 countries. And again, it varies from year to year. But the biggies are Russia, China, Japan, Germany, United Kingdom, France. Those are the biggies. And Saudi Arabia. I forget Saudi Arabia. And India. I shouldn't forget India or even Italy. South Korea as well. And I have a few charts that illustrate that. So what's going to happen is you're going to see a readjustments, whereas the United States percentage of total military spending will go down, both in terms of the U.S. budget in total as well as total world expenditures. What also should be going up are the spending of other nations. For example, Japan. Japan feels definitely threatened by China. So Japan will, and it's doing it as I speak, increasing its military spending. Now, it's still less than a fourth what we spend, but you're going to see that happen. And as China is successful exporting its goods, China will be spending more money. But they still spend a small fraction. And remember, they have enemies. They have Russia on one side, India to the south, and Japan to the east. So I'm not surprised that China has such a large military budget, but they are truly threatened. So they have a large army and are building a navy. But relative to ours, the capabilities don't even come close. I'm getting the signal to wrap it up, and I will. So I wanted to highlight that what you're seeing today in the news is the fact that the U.S. military is downsizing first the Army, then the Air Force, Navy, and Marines. It's happening. It should not be a surprise. It will continue for at least another 4 years. It's not going to happen overnight, and Congress will have a lot to say because they determine what is authorized, and they also determine what is actually appropriated so that they can spend the money. But this is just the first wave. The second wave, and by far the more important wave, is the fact that you have eight other departments that need to be radically cut. And after that happens, the third wave and the biggest wave are entitlements and welfare programs. All three groups, defense spending, the eight other departments, eight to ten other departments, and then finally, out of necessity, we're going to have to cut not only welfare programs, but also entitlement programs, and that means Social Security benefits, Medicare, and Medicaid. That will happen. It has to happen because the United States and its people can literally not support with their tax dollars the size of the government that we have today.
You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening, and now back to the music.